Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best in new indie, electro, EDM and punk, and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
You're listening to The Film Show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM, and I'm Martin.
And I'm Denise. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Welcome to The Film Show on a lovely sunny day in Sheffield.
It is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That won't last long.
No, not really. Going on holiday soon, so.
Yeah. Right, we've got quite a few items to get through today. I don't know where it all came from. I'm sitting there again yesterday. We got nothing.
I mean, you were sitting there fuming about most of them, I think.
There was quite a few of them.
I'm here to hold you back and calm you down.
Yeah. apparently, there is talk of the production company that made Adolescence planning a second series.
And I just want to calm everything down here and just suggest this is just part of the news cycle and the clickbait thing that now comes up around any kind of successful show. There's talk, isn't there? But they're not specifying that it's Adolescence 2.
No, I think they were talking about, because like Brad Pitt's production team was involved in it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But I just think I'm just exhausted with this constant regurgitation of stuff. Can't you just do something else?
Let it stand alone. Yeah. And I think, to be fair, that's more likely to be what they do, and they're just talking about making something else.
I mean, maybe they're
and
just...
And then all the clickbait
maybe they're just flying some kites here to see what the general...
And I mean, you'd be mad not to try and capitalise on the success of it to get something else made, wouldn't you?
But not a follow-on from this, maybe.
No, and they probably don't want to do that, right?
Well, when you look at what the other thing is they're planning to do...
Oh, yeah, well, we can rant about that one together, yeah, definitely.
But we'll get to that in a moment. Maybe we need a palate cleanser between those two minute hates that we're going to have about this.
Is it just speculation though at the moment?
I think at the moment, yeah. I mean, these things. Well, this. Well, something would need to be written. Something would need, putting something together out of nothing.
I think it would be more interesting if it was from a different angle completely and none of the same characters.
In fact, I don't even really want to think. I don't even want to waste brain cells thinking about what it that they could do.
I mean, you put it on the schedule at number one, so
I did because
you want to talk about it.
Because you began with A. That was why.
A for absolutely no thank
and
you.
And also it gets it out of the way and we can have a cleaner, brighter, happier show until we get to Threads.
Yeah. 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 Okay.
When you'll take over with the 2 minute eight.
I think I lost some friends on the WhatsApp chat this week on that one.
I just kept storm. Just leave them to it. Leave them to it. Did Keanu and Elon have a discussion?
Again, A for absolutely not.
But it went wide, didn't it?
Yeah.
There was a story all over the net where Elon Musk and Keanu Reeves had this discussion about AI. It was in front of an audience, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, and no one was expecting what Keanu said. It totally slayed Elon Musk.
Keanu shuts Elon down on live TV.
Why is this how we talk now?
I don't know.
Is this how we communicate?
Why have I put this on the schedule? Well, anyway, it didn't happen, but it was, it was Elon saying how great technology is and it's going to take over everything.
Allegedly, Keanu said, but will a machine ever know what it feels like to make something?
Keanu, I think you are God.
Or what it is like to create something beautiful out of a moment of sorrow. And that's apparently what slayed Elon Musk. Oh, what is this story?
Keanu, you did make 47 Ronin. I mean, that wasn't good, Keanu.
Creativity.
But you've had your moments. You've had your moments, man.
But the moment was he said, supposedly, fake Keanu said, creativity arrives from experience, pain, love and hope. And it's just such a cheesy... But it's the kind of thing that AI would come up with for Keanu to say about AI.
Where he'd be far more profound. The new. So...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a weird one, that one. But it's a weird thing how these stories get out there and get shared.
But it's quite worrying as well, though, isn't it? You can see how this AI does start to feed into all sorts of things. I mean, and I must admit, for the first few seconds, this can't be. It's just too much, Bad Elon, good Keanu.
Good Keanu.
But he's good when he's bad as well, isn't he?
He's good when he's bad. Well, he's very plastic when he's bad, but he's still Keanu.
Was it the Neon something or other, where he was bad Keanu?
I don't remember. I have a 7-inch single by, I can't remember the name of the band now, but it's just, the lyrics of it are just wondering how you say Keanu's name and they just love him. It's like a little punk song from the 90s.
Those years have gone, though, where you wondered how to say Keanu's name. I remember when he first came out, hey, how did you say this guy's name? The canoe? Keanu?
I think that was, yeah, Keanu, Kanunu, Kanuni, yeah. Kanui, yeah. How do you say his name?
Keanu. Thank you.
But, yeah, that's a little bit of nonsense that kept people busy this week a bit. There's no holding back. We have to now mention the talks of warp films. Talking about remaking Threads. Now, what format are they talking about and how far are they talking about it? And is this just nonsense or is it...
Oh, they'll make a six-season series out of it, won't they? They will flog it to death.
But it's Warp Films, isn't it, who are Sheffield-based?
And it's also the company that did Adolescence. Yeah. They're complicit in it.
Martin's getting mad in the corner. Are they talking about a series or are they talking about a one-off? And why?
That's the only question. Mm. Why? It doesn't matter what it is. It's pointless. I think it's completely pointless to be...
Threads is Threads. It belongs where it was made and when it was made. And an audience now can discover it.
And I don't think it's even so much for us to be talking about this as being, oh, it was something that was made in Sheffield, so if they make it again, it would have to be in Sheffield again. No, I mean, Threads was like a...
It was a universal
It was
story.
Universal. This was what would happen if there was nuclear war. And...
It would be rubbish.
Yes.
We would lose people, we would never see them again.
Woolworths would go.
That would go first.
Yes, and it did in the film, as you said. There would be mushroom clouds over the town hall, but I just can't see the reason for it, because just some things are perfect in the way they were made and the when they were made. Mm. So this was directed by Mick Jackson, it was written by Barry Hines, filmed in Sheffield and filmed on a micro budget, but it still stuns you now. I think it was shown last year,
I can't watch it.
For a 40th anniversary.
I can't watch it because I find it too much.
And the thing why it was so powerful then, and why I think any attempt to redo it would not be as powerful, is that this was in the back of our minds 40 years ago all the time. The threat of nuclear war was something that was there. It was part of everyday life. Without you going home and thinking about it every night.
I mean,
it was just there all the
stuff,
time.
Loads of the teen fiction that I read was about surviving an Armageddon like that and Zed for Zachariah, that kind of thing.
And it was everywhere in culture. Two Tribes, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Kate Bush, Breathing, Raymond Briggs, When the Wind Blows.
Oh, God, that was traumatic.
And, you know...
Imagine all the kids that thought they were getting a snowman.
Merry Christmas! little Bobby went to bed early. He was
never came out.
Yeah. But you tend to forget just how everywhere this
was. Oh, I don't.
Without it being on the news, you know. Mm. And so it was like a perfect... What's the word I'm trying? It sort of blew away all the... if, mights and maybes, and you said, look, this is what would happen. Mm. And, I mean, this was 1984. 20 years before that, the BBC had made another film about a nuclear attack on Britain called The War Game, which had been, although they didn't say at the time, had been banned by the government because it showed up the complete and utter... Mm. Uselessness of what the
he
civil defence.
He went off to France, didn't he, after that?
Yeah. Watkin made. Yeah, Peter Watkin, who made that, went off and made. He went to Hollywood, France, because no one would give him any money to make a film in this country. And funnily enough, the film was finally. I think it was screened on TV in 1986, I believe, but on Channel 4 as part of a season they
like
had
band
about
stuff,
band
yeah.
stuff, yeah. And it was also shown, it used to be on a loop being shown at there was like a nuclear base thing up in Scotland, just near St Andrews, which is a vast underground complex. You could go in and look around to see what it'd be like to sleep in a room with 60 other soldiers on bunk beds and eat beans every day for, and have these funny phones with dials on them to try and see if there was anyone still out there. They would show it in one of these rooms. It'd just be being shown continuously. Really, really weird. But if you sit and watch the war game, it's still a punch to the stomach.
I mean, it's one of those... I think we've had this chat before, but yeah. I bought it on Blu-ray, and it's like a box set with Culloden, which is a reenactment. It's filmed the Culloden battle as if it's a documentary. It's really good. I've never been able to watch War Games because I'm too scared. It's too vivid a memory for me. Feeling.
And so there's a history of these things. So, you know, they didn't remake the War Game. So why have you got a remake? If you want to just show Threads again.
Yeah, or make something that is a similar... You know, we've got... the world's a dangerous place right now.
Yeah.
Give us that story, but don't call it Threads and don't say it's a remake of Threads.
You don't set it back in the 80s. You know, we've got that. We've got that film. And it doesn't need to be updated. And can you imagine all the CGI effects they'd be putting in on this, where in Threads, a melting bottle of milk is so shocking when you see it in the context of the effects on of the attack on this city.
Well, I think that's our invitation to the premiere, Rip Doc.
I think so.
Never mind.
We should say, a couple of years back, they did do a remake of Threads. They did a Threads Redux.
Yes, you shared that. Yeah.
Which was... it was this guy who used to go around and make these Redux versions, like 6 or 7 minute versions of big movies. And he did one of Threads, and they got all lots and lots of the people who'd been in the film to reenact the parts, including someone who'd been a young baby at the time and was carried around the moor in a onesie. And she was now in her late 30s.
These are supporting like extras.
Supporting extras, and some of the people who were... Yeah. Yeah. It's
a bit
flippant.
That's a remake you can get behind.
That's a remake, and that's all it needs. If nothing else, it'd maybe cheer you up on the way out from it.
Well, we shall wait and see what they actually come up with.
Not much, I hope. Mm.
What's your trailer trash? I'm going to have to admit, I've not actually watched the trailer.
I saw this the other week, and it looks interesting. It's this film called Friendship, and it's a comedy with Paul Rudd and a guy called Tim Robinson.
I think I might have seen this.
Who may not be immediately familiar to you, but he...
He's in
that... it's on Netflix. It's called I Think You Should Leave. And it's a sketch. And they are so uncomfortable, these sketches. And quite often the characters that Robinson plays are, from the very moment you meet them, they're barely holding it together.
Yeah.
They're on the verge of hysteria, and they're just about to go up from there. Now, this looks like a slow burn thing of a family moving into a new neighbourhood, and Tim Robinson plays a new guy moving in. He makes friends with a guy across the road.
And it's A24, isn't it?
A24.
It's quite interesting.
And it looks like things start to spiral out of control. And now, from the trailer, I'm not sure if we're looking at who is to blame or is the most awful here, but it looks very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think I saw this trailer a couple of weeks back. It just looked like, this is a weird little American indie. I think I can get behind.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's going to be worth catching, this one. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's Friendship coming up to Netflix.
I think it's going out into theatres.
Ah. Must be in the next few weeks then.
I think it was down as late April, I think.
That is the next few weeks.
Yeah.
I hate to break it to you.
Amazingly so.
We're halfway through the year
and
already.
And the other thing to break, they're making a Threads remake. Did you do that? No! Shush, stop it!
Shush. Shall we have a bit of music?
Oh, go on.
Well, I went to see my new favourite film of the year so far this week, and it totally passed me by. It came out on, like, about the 15th of March, and what with one thing and another, I didn't get round to seeing it. But they do that great thing at the light where they'll show something that they haven't really got the appetite for a whole run for, but they'll get everyone in on one or two nights on a Monday or Tuesday.
I'm really sorry when I missed this one, because it sounds it's
a fabulous film. I'm going to play a little bit of a track from it first, and then I'll talk about the film a bit. So this is from Sister Midnight, and it's Howling Wolf. Howling Wolf, and that
he was howling.
That opens the soundtrack for Sister Midnight. It's the opening scene where a couple are coming back from an arranged marriage. They're on the train, and the train features a lot in it. They come back from the village where she's from. She's got no idea where she's going. There's no words spoken.
You couldn't hear it over that music anyway.
The film is like a black comedy. It's by film director Karan Kandari, who's an Indian film director. He lived in Kuwait, I believe, when he was younger, moved around a lot. And as a consequence, I think he's lived in India. I think he's lived in America, over here. This is, I think, his first feature film. I think they've maybe done some shorts before. It's I just loved it. And I don't want to spoil the plot. I want everyone to see the film. Although hopefully people have, because it's not on in the cinemas anymore. It had a couple of...
Right.
Because it was out on the 15th. I think
so
it's
we should
coming.
Be looking out for it to wherever we can pick it up.
It's a BFI and Channel 4 film, so hopefully it'll be streaming soon. I believe it was streaming on Curzon.
BFI streaming site. Sometimes stuff goes on there pretty quickly,
but
doesn't it?
But the soundtrack for it includes... So I'll play a little bit of some other stuff, but it's got... It veers from Motorhead... to Buddy Holly, to Blind Willie Johnson, Marty Robbins, the El Paso tune.
That's the one you love at the moment,
yeah,
isn't it?
Well, that's not in my track of four, but it was nearly in
but
there.
But I'm sure you'll put it in a few weeks' time.
Probably, yeah. So, yeah, that's my... I don't want to spoil the... Like, just see it. It's my film of the year so far.
So that's your review as well, is it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A bit late.
Because I had that further down. Did I have it further down? Yeah, oh, I don't know.
It's got a kicking soundtrack. I'm going to play some more tracks from it later as well.
Right.
What's next? We're going stepping back in time, aren't we?
Well, first off, we've got it's probably something to announce, an event evening taking place at The Light.
Yes.
On Thursday, the 17th,
so
I believe.
It is, yeah, and it is Kim's Video Store. So they're doing a screening of a documentary, which you can tell me more about this place.
Me?
Because you've been there.
I've been there.
Yeah. But they're doing a really interesting little thing to go along with it, where you, in the spirit of the old days, you bring in a DVD to give to someone and you pick up a DVD that someone else has donated. And it could, you could either get a load of old toot from this, or... you could get something quite exciting, because maybe if you went along, you might have got something on Blu-ray and DVD, and you might give the DVD away. Could get some pretty interesting titles, maybe.
Well, I would, but I'll just end up with a Steven Seagal film, yeah. Which wouldn't be too bad, actually.
It's a nice idea. I like the tie-in of
it. And maybe to give that... So the documentary is being screened, and just to give you a little background on Kim's Video or Mondo Kim's, depending on which one of the stores you went to in Manhattan, Kim's was this. I think there was five or six of them at one point around Manhattan, and they were. They started off ostensibly as a video hire. Shop moved into DVD when the 2000s came into play, but mostly they were there renting DVDs, and it's believed that they had 55,000 tapes for you to choose to rent 55,000. And a young man, Kim, who ran the business, it wasn't just stuff that was being released by studios. Loads of it was bootlegged, stuff that had been recorded off TV, stuff that they'd bought from all around the world. So, you know, stuff like Turkish superhero movies, lots of Nollywood stuff. And stuff that had been recorded from all around the world. It was... the range was almost too big for you to get your head around. Mm. And this stuff would often be in boxes which had no pictures, and might not have any details of it, maybe a director's name and the actual name of the film. So it was quite cultish as well, and very cliquish, and... you would see films here that you would have never have heard of. It'd also be lots of, like, underground movies, you know, indie, independent films, stuff that had been made for nothing. These shops became places for people interested in film to gather. And I went to the one at, I think it was the one at Bleecker Street, which I think was... Kim's Video Underground, and It was almost a headache in there. There's these walls and walls of videotapes. And I think this was about 2000. So DVD hadn't quite established itself yet. It was just, you could get lost in there. There was just so much stuff in there. But also so much stuff that you had no idea what it was. As the years went on, they were starting to get raided a lot because they had all of this illicit stuff in there. And the collection was, it was just like eating itself. There were so many tapes, and then they did go into DVD. And eventually, Kim called a halt to it and said he wanted someone to take on the collection and to move it and maintain it. And he would have Kim's videos no more. They'd all be closed. And they all closed down in 2009. And then what the film will take up, where things get really, really weird, is this collection somehow ends up in Sicily.
Yes, and who knows?
Yeah. This guy who was a culture minister under Berlusconi is trying to do something to revitalise this small town in Sicily called, I think it was Selenyi.
Because we should say he offered to give away the collection, provided it remain intact and be available to his video members.
Yes, if they were ever in Sicily. Yeah. And then it all gets into, as some of these best documentaries are, where you start off from and where you end up.
Completely different places.
Completely different places. And so the story then becomes, where are these 55,000 tapes? Where is the collection? And I think that is what the main thrust of the film is going to be about. But it looks really, really interesting.
Well, that is on the 17th next week, Wednesday. I can't go because I'm seeing Greg Davis that night. Otherwise, I'd go. But I've just checked and there are some tickets left on the light.
Oh, right. I don't know whether the delay going down to London. I might go and do it. But then we were just knocking around a few ideas about physical media, as you and I are no strangers to.
That's my house. Yeah. Teeming with it.
Maybe between us, we're running Kim close, close for his money. But what occurred to me was, it is quite narrow now where you can get a DVD or a Blu-ray, or heaven help us, a 4K disc. I'm not going there with those. These eyes are never going to know.
She shakes her head firmly.
So HMV.
I mean,
on the high street.
I still go, and the HMV's getting, if anything, it's got more. And it's got when you walk in, they've got the collection. So you've got Arrow, Indicator,
but that's BFO, that's what's calling to us, isn't it? Occasionally, you might have a look around the sale, see if something's slipped in. But
I get a lot from charity shops.
That's real sort of hit and miss, isn't it? Whereas if you say, oh, something's just come out, I'd like to get a copy of that. It's only really HMV, really, isn't it?
For us locally, yeah.
Yeah. And I was looking back, you know how good Poundland...
used to be.
Poundland used to be great.
You used to go in and say, how much is that? It was a pound.
But they used to run, they used to sell... I've got a few of them here, these... these are DVDs, which were a pound, and they would have three films on the one disc. So the transfer quality was normally pretty rough. But there could be... Oh, I've got one here, which... the three classics on this particular disc are Walter Matthau in Gangster Story.
What year is that?
1960.
Gosh.
Very little known, but he's the only film that Walter Matthau directed.
Did he?
Yeah, you see. You're interested already.
I am. Wish I could go back in time and
Beat the Devil.
Shop in Poundland.
Beat the Devil, directed by John Huston from 1953.
And that's Humphrey Bogart.
With Humphrey Bogart, Gina Lollobrigida, Robert Morley. A film which has fallen into what's called as public domain.
Right.
There is no copyright on it. And there's a number of films like this which slip through the net. And so they can turn up on these really cheap discs. It's not a great transfer, but it's quite good. And then there's also a Poverty Row thriller from the 1940s, Boris Karloff in British Intelligence. £1, I what, give you.
You had another one there, which had
I did.
A
I had two more there. Which one?
Show me. I can't see.
I've got one here that has Carnival of Souls on.
That's the one, yeah.
An amazing film, you know, independent film. It also has The Mesa of Lost Women, which has the best dance sequence in any Poverty Row film I have ever seen.
It's quite niche, that.
Well, once you see it, you'll be wanting more of it. And look at Bela Lugosi double bill. Invisible Ghost, Scared to Death, and White Zombie. Now, you can't get these. You know, I used to be able to go into Poundland and have loads of this stuff.
Mm.
All they have now is, you know, the real scrag end of DVDs.
The
you know,
90s yeah. action films that nobody wants.
Yeah. Mm. Which then brought us on to thinking
well,
about
I've got, other... I've got a pile of these at home.
Do you remember Sunday morning, you get up early to get down to the newsagents to buy every Sunday newspaper that you could so you could get the free DVD therein? And... wow, look at some of this stuff that you could have picked up. How about this lasted for about 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, I'm. This is how I... well, The Independent did a video.
Did you want to look at some of these?
Did a VHS. And I got the VHS of Naked, and that's how I first saw Naked, the Mike Lee film we talked about the other week. Oh, my life. I've got this one, La Dolce Vita, from The Observer.
And that was from The Observer, and... it's an absolutely amazing transfer, that is. It looks fantastic. But as I was saying, it also... that's my favourite. This...
The Sun.
You can...
The
you
Sun
can
brings
sort,
you...
They all know
the
what their demographic
brings you,
is.
The Dolce Vita, right?
The Sun brings you on the buses.
And Carry On Cowboy.
Carry On Cowboy. The Daily Mail... Daily Mail likes its British war film, like The Dam Busters or The Cruel Sea. But given where it's due, they also do a masterpiece like Millions Like Us.
Yes.
And I sob uncontrollably at the end of that. That is one of the most emotional films.
That's Gordon Jackson, isn't it? Yeah. The Second World War factory.
Yeah.
Oh. But then you've got The Independent. Wings of Desire. You can see they're profiling their
The Guardian,
audience.
Cinema Paradiso.
I've got that one too.
The Times, and I'd very rarely bear The Times, but a banging version of Fritz Lang's Metropolis.
I think I got a lot from my mum, because my mum and dad were getting the Daily Mail.
Yeah, that my mum and dad used to get the Mail.
And I've got, there's a lot of ropey old British films in there as well, from the sort of 90s.
It's like some Jackie Collins adaptations
not quite
as well. No.
Still got them.
But it was like another way in to just getting access to movies. Because I think another thing we've discussed in the past is you can have all these streaming sites, but a lot of the time you can't see the films that you might actually want to see. There's lots of stuff which just sort of drops out and you have to wait for it to come back probably on another... on another platform.
Well,
Buena Vista Social Club, The Observer. How hip can you be?
Yeah, I find streaming really frustrating. Like, I want to watch an old 70s American independent film. There's nothing on there.
No.
And like, I subscribe to so many streaming things, and I'm like, I don't want to commit to everything every month. Just want to occasionally go to a video store and get a DVD and take it back.
And sometimes you just think, wouldn't it be good to go to a shop where they had all these films in and I could just go and get one for a couple
Just borrow it and then take it back.
Yeah.
I'd give them a fee.
Yeah.
Well,
what's so wrong with that? Huh? And there's people that go, well, you could just go on and buy the films online if you want. Yeah, well, I know. Maybe I just want to get out of the house for a bit.
I'm going to be sat in a dark room watching a film.
Yeah, you know, I'll go out 10 minutes before and buy a big bag of that sort of really, really sweet popcorn and be sick at the end of the film because I've eaten it all. And a really big bottle of urn brew or something like that and just sit there and eat and drink that while I'm watching Wings of Desire.
Oh.
It's not been a good day today. It's really upset me, all this thread stuff.
Oh, come on.
Right then.
Come on.
Well,
let's
anyway,
have a bit more music.
That was our walk down memory lane.
Yeah.
A walk we may never come back from.
I'm going to play another song. I'm going to play another song from
Yes,
Sister
please
Rags
do.
While Martin cries in a corner.
Don't play it as loud this time.
Sin Sissamouth. I hadn't heard of Sin Sissamouth before, but
no,
Sin
I hadn't.
Sissamouth
but
is...
I listened to a bit of the stuff when I was putting this this together.
Well,
it's interesting stuff.
Yeah, he was a Cambodian singer songwriter, active from the '50s to the '70s, I believe.
Oh, and I wonder why he stopped.
Yeah, very sad. He disappeared in the Khmer Rouge regime. Not clear what happened to him. But he's widely considered the king of Khmer music. And there's about five or six tracks of his songs that feature on the Sister Midnight soundtrack. It's all me now, isn't it? I'm the only one that's been seeing any films this week.
I was going to, but it was... I was saying about unicorns. I could not be bothered.
Well, I'm going to kick off then with...
Make it quick.
Holy Cow. So I went to see Holy Cow last night at the showroom. And goodness me, I really enjoyed it. And it was another week, another French film in the rural countryside, this time the Jura region. And bearing in mind I'm vegan, I didn't mind at all watching this grim way of making cheese. It's set in like a farming community. What? What are you looking at that for?
How can cheese be... traumatic, making cheese be traumatic?
Well, they use animal rennet It's very, honestly, it's very unpasteurised, hands in, dirty hands, you know. I used to love cheese, but I'm quite glad I don't eat it anymore, having watched it being made. It's quite a learning experience. The director, Louise Cravossier, French, she's from the region, and she's obviously written this film with a love of the area. It's sort of a coming-of-age film. The narrative, I suppose, is very sort of simple. Totone is played by newcomer Clément Favot. He's 18. He's living a life of rural debauchery. The film opens watching him getting teased by everyone at a country fair to strip, and he's a bit drunk. Has a terrible one-night stand. His dad finds him, brings him home. But his dad has his own issues with alcohol, and his dad runs like a small cheese-making thing. Early on, his dad dies in very sad circumstances, and Totone is left with his little sister, Claire, played by a lovely little actress called Luna Garrett. And I say actress, none of these are actors. They're all... She's cast all non-professional people in the roles. And he has to suddenly go from being a boy to a man and looking after his sister. And so his plan is he will try and... Well, he works for a dairy farm, a large dairy farm, tries to keep a job there. It's not very successful, but he gets the idea that he's going to make this prize-winning cheese and win 30,000 euros. That's it, really. That's the sort of the journey of the film.
That
he meets a lovely dairy farmer called Mary Lees, who he falls in love with. And he's trying to use her to get her milk, because she's got good milk, for his dirty cheese.
If I come out with that, you'd be...
But it's really...
cheesy.
It's not cheesy. That's the thing. It's not cheesy.
It's fromage.
It's beautiful. And I can highly recommend it. It's an hour and a half as well. Perfect. Okay. Yep.
It'd be just the sort of thing for me to take some nice cheese in with me and nibble on it.
You would want to nibble on some cheese. I think the director's definitely got a love of the landscape and the people. And it's about rural life as well, I suppose, and young people and growing up. Give it a watch. My next film. Normally I'd hand over to you now.
I'm saying nothing. I'm giving... The microphone is yours.
Well, I did go and see The Return, Umberto Pasolini's... I can't even say it. Homer's Odyssey. But it's like the latter part of it. So there's no mythical creatures. There's just old man Rafe turning up naked on the shore 20 years after the Trojan Wars, coming back to Ithaca. I don't know my Greek stories, if I'm absolutely honest, and my Greek history. But Rafe is very sinewy. Very muscly, and also looks very hungry. He's really put his body through it for this part. Juliette Binoche plays the faithful and patient Penelope, who is his queen, being surrounded by terrible people trying to marry her to take over the kingdom. It's been adapted by Edward Bond. Now, I saw Edward Bond's version of Leah years ago, and it is sort of quite theatrical and almost Shakespearean.
Well, from the trailer I saw, I thought, yeah, this looks as though they've like just transposed a theatre production, but
it feels like a little bit theatrical, yeah. And really, the meat of it is when Juliette Binoche and Ralph Fiennes get together, which doesn't happen very early on, because he keeps his distance. So there's a lot of exposition and a lot of chatting in lovely sunny places about what's happened. And he's come back from this. Well, I mean, he's the only survivor, but not only is the only survivor of this campaign, he's the instigator, he's the leader. So it's the PTSD with bells on, I suppose. It's worth it for the denouement, I'd say. If you like a bloody climax, you're going to get one in
here. Stabfest.
Yeah, yeah. So... I enjoyed it. I don't think it's going to be for everybody, perhaps. Have I got to do another one now? Have I not talked enough? I couldn't get enough of it this week. Well, I also saw Last Swim at the Showroom yesterday, which is on this week. This was a lovely little film. Another coming-of-age story, another bunch of 18-year-olds. the lead in it is very, very good. She plays a British Iranian girl who very early on, so it's A-level results day and it all takes place over this one day, but she is also dealing with the fact that she's being diagnosed with something quite serious. She's got aspirations to go. She's got a place at UCL to do astrophysics. She's obviously the genius of her friendship group. But they're all a lovely bunch of multicultural, nice young people who don't know about her secret. And she wants this final last day with them. You get the sense that she's planning something a little bit final, let's say.
Mm.
Really good performances. Deborah Heckmatt plays Ziba, who's the lead. But there's some really good performances from the other young people in the cast. It's a nice film. I did actually gasp in the cinema when something happened in the story, and I was like, they shouldn't have got me with that. Mm. But I did. I literally went, oh, no, mm-hmm. at one point. And it's a nicely, gently told, beautiful story. So, yeah, I've had three good films at the cinema. Nothing like out of the way. I'd say Holy Cow out of the three is my favourite of the three.
Well, that was a great roundup you did there. But you see, sometimes you do need me to interject a little bit more, because sometimes I know I'm sitting here and I'm doing my hand across my throat. Enough. But I think you coped with that brilliantly.
Thanks, boss. Should we have another song?
Why not?
Go on then.
For you. Okay, you're listening to the film show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM, and that was T-Rex and Mambo Sun from the Sister Midnight soundtrack. A bit of a roundup then for what is out this week.
Well, we should mention that we're not here next week.
Oh, sorry,
Because it's going to be a big roundup.
Yes. We won't be here next weekend as it's Easter. And we're having a well-deserved rest. But next weekend, if you're around, you can see on the new releases front Warfare, Alex Garland's Socket to 'em war movie about the Iraq War. Sinners, Ryan Coogler's bluesy horror film.
Yes, it looks a genre mix there. Yeah.
And within the cast is almost local boy Jack O'Connell.
Yes.
And there's a film about penguins with Steve Coogan.
One penguin in particular.
Is it one penguin? Well, there you go.
Yeah. We can't seem to get excited about that one, though.
We're just going to have to leave that there.
The showroom are starting a new season called Midnight Marauders, which, you know, midnight screenings that used to be anarchic. I'm not sure the anarchy is going to be there, but they're showing a season of films. It's basically once a month on a Friday night, 11:30, midnight screenings. It was 11:30 is before midnight, but maybe, I don't know. Starting off with The Clockwork Orange on Friday the 18th of April, and their other ones will include Dirty Harry, Warriors, The Fly, Pink Flamingos, and the original Blade.
Same old lineup, isn't it? Same old, same old. Try something new.
I think they're trying to show the films that would have been part of the original kind of midnight screening.
No, they're just doing the same old thing.
But what they are screening next week, which I can't go to, or the week after next, one of my favourite films, Oh Lucky Man. 5:15 on the 24th of April. Go and see that. It is 2 hours, 50 minutes long, and it is bonkers, but
there is the chocolate sandwich.
Do you remember when I first came as a guest on
this show? I do.
I bought my songs from that film because I loved it so much. You said,
well, I had to
record
them for you and put them on a CD. You told me what you wanted me to recall, but yeah. You did it all, didn't you? Yeah, you did it all.
If you want to catch Watership Down.
No.
No, some people might. Sunday and Monday, that's when at the showroom as well.
It's Easter. Easter Bunnies.
If you want to see The Return, it's only showing at the Kerr's on this week, and then it's on, I think, at the showroom the light of the week.
No, I don't. It's all right.
Well, you know, you're missing a
beautiful treat. I'm in a cinema ennui at the moment.
We're going to go now. We're going to leave you with our last track from Sister Midnight, which closes the film. Sister Midnight is a Stooges song, however, though it doesn't appear in the film, but this Stooges song does. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We'll hope that Martin gets his mojo back in that time and he comes back enthused about film.
I need to find my vim and vigour again.
Go see Sister Midnight, see what you think.
Okay.
All right. See you in a couple of weeks.
In my dreams.